Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, parents, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen spotlights human trafficking by raising community awareness of this heinous crime. Human trafficking is a modern form of slavery. Human trafficking includes forced labor, domestic servitude, and commercial sex trafficking. It is illegal exploitation of the most vulnerable in society. It is considered the third largest criminal activity in the world and has no demographic restrictions. It happens in your community. Joining 411 Teen via the Zoom platform, I welcome Robin Hassler-Thompson, Executive Director of STAC, Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, and Kia Thomas, Board Member, Secretary, and Community Activist. Welcome both of you to 411 Teen.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hollifield. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Dr. Hollifield. I'm glad that you invited me. It's great to be here.
Oh, I'm looking forward to talking to you. I know the information you have to share is just always invaluable. I tried to depict what human trafficking is. I don't know if I provided an accurate picture of human trafficking. So will you tell us, what is human trafficking?
You know, you actually opened the door in a great way because you talked about the targeting of people who are vulnerable. And that is really the singular description of someone who is a target of traffickers. Okay. So if there's an unmet need that someone has, a trafficker will sort of come in and try to meet that need. So I also think of it as one person taking advantage of another person, exploiting them for mm-hmm. sex or labor, as you just said, and doing it really motivated by profit and greed. And it's kind of the commodification of a person. It's turning a person into property to generate some sort of, mm-hmm. of benefit or financial gain. So just exactly what she said. And, you know, a lot of times people don't realize that it's going on right here in our community. And that's the other piece of it.
Well, that was the impetus for me doing this whole program, because before we started taping, I was talking about how people just don't recognize it. They see it as that problem over there, but not here, okay? We don't have that problem. It doesn't exist here. And so that was the real impetus for me doing this edition on STAC. So again, I appreciate you both taking the time to, share your expertise and your experience with the listening audience. Let's look a little bit more at vulnerable targets. Let me make sure I have an idea of who they would be. The kid that runs away from home and is out on the street. Would that be a vulnerable target? Share with us. Give us some concrete, examples of what vulnerable targets would be for the listening audience so they can have an appreciation of just who is vulnerable.
Sure. And how about if I jump in with some examples of what our agency has seen and just kind of to couch it too and let your listeners know that since STAC was founded 8 years ago, we've helped over 200 survivors of both sex and labor trafficking. Okay. About half of those are labor trafficking victims, and that surprises a lot of people. And also that, you know, the people who've been trafficked in labor can be adults, they can be immigrants, or they could be people who are U.S. citizens, you know. So we've seen all of that. We've seen people who are exploited, you know, in the agricultural industry, both here and in our surrounding areas. We've seen people who are also labor trafficked in professional skills like air conditioning, repair, HVAC. Somebody was lured to this area. One of the people we helped was someone who was labor trafficked after Hurricane Michael. Remember how, you know, the blue tarps were all over so many roofs? Yeah, and the debris after a hurricane, this is very typical that after a disaster of any kind, that this man was brought into this, it was trafficked into our area, lured with the promise of a good job rebuilding roofs and clearing debris. And he got an infection and it got really, really bad. He was able to escape the situation and Stack was able to assist him to get the medical care that he needed and also to help him apply for a T visa, to help connect him with attorneys and other advocates so that he could be documented in our country because he had been exploited and was entitled to that. We've also seen people who are sex trafficked who are also victims of domestic and domestic violence. Again, at the beginning of the pandemic and since then, it's very common for us to see victims of domestic abuse who are, you know, abused in a lot of ways. And one of the ways they're abused is the perpetrator says, now you have to go out and have sex for money. That's how we're going to live, and forces them into that. So a lot of times people don't understand how trafficking is a crime of many crimes, and that the crimes that a trafficker perpetrates on somebody could be things like that, domestic violence. It could be somebody, you know, when we started, I'm talking so much.
No, but we want to hear everything.
When we started this work, you know, over 20 years ago, that's when I started personally doing this work. We didn't use the phrase familial trafficking or parental trafficking all that often. And since the advent of fentanyl, of oxy, all of those were drug dependency became such a bigger societal issue. We're seeing family members traffic other family members to support their drug habits. So, you know, it's an issue that sort of infiltrates, connects with a lot of other things going on in the world, and that this is part of it. So that's a snapshot of some of the people that we've been able to work with and empower.
Now, Kia, what drew you to human trafficking? What drew you to become an advocate?
I think the biggest thing was meeting Robin. She actually was a guest on another podcast that I was on, and seeing how passionate she was about this subject, knowing that coming from PR world, broadcast world, we're always trying to find ways to make brand visibility more prevalent, right? So how can I help? So my biggest thing was the best way to use what my gift is to become a part of it. And when I got the phone call of, Kia, we've been hoping you want to come over. And I'm like, yes, I didn't have to call you. You called me. So it was one of those things of wherever I can help, I want to help. And hearing all of the different stories at the time, of course, you know, from myths to what truth is. And at the time, I'd kind of look at it as a hybrid situation. I was stuck between what a myth was and what the truth was. You know, you're hearing about so many things and it's making you feel as though you are almost in a movie, like, oh my God, they're going to do this and then this is going to happen. When in all actuality, a lot of those things do not happen that way. And I'm also, you know, being a truth seeker, you want to know what the truth is. And so how do you do that? You become a part of the solution. So I think utilizing what my gifts were, which is PR and communication and I was so elated when I was able to become a part of this prevalent organization and to see how these women work so hard to ensure that one day, maybe we can, it can be a complete expulsion of trafficking, right? And that's a broad way, that's a huge way to look at it, and you're hoping that that happens one day. But I think that was my main reason for wanting to contribute to the fight against human trafficking, by helping to raise awareness, mobilize support, and ultimately, like we stated, you want to bring an end to this form of modern day slavery. So that was my reason.
Okay. Stack is a service provider, and you're a service provider for the Second Judicial Circuit, right? Is that still the case?
It is. Okay. Yes.
Because I thought, well, I better talk about STAC. The listening audience might want to know a little bit more about it. Now, when I say the Second Judicial Circuit, exactly what area does that cover?
Sure. So if you think about Leon County kind of being in the center, it's every county that touches Leon, basically. So with one exception. So we have Jefferson, Gadsden, Liberty, Leon, Wakulla, and Franklin counties. And that said, though, I will encourage people, even if you're in, say, Panama City, or you're outside, technically outside our area, you could still contact STAC, because what we do is we maintain a network in our whole area, and sometimes in other states as well, where we can reach out and try to get help for somebody who might be in an area that's technically outside of our jurisdiction.
Okay. What services does STAC actually provide?
Sure. Well, what we have found in this area is that, I'll start by saying, whatever a survivor needs, that's what we will try to provide. Okay. So if someone needs housing, we'll work with local housing providers, and we also have access to a housing support program where we're able to directly get somebody rent or other kinds of support.
Robin, Robin, this is one of those times where I said I would have to interrupt you.
Oh, sure.
So what I asked you just to hold your thoughts, and when we come back, we'll continue with this conversation. You're tuned in.
Absolutely.
Tuned in to 411 Teen. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. This edition is focusing on Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center, STAC. I had to interrupt Robin Hessler Thompson, who is the executive director, and was talking about actually the advocacy center and what they provide. Robin, you want to continue your thoughts?
Absolutely. So we started off talking about housing, which tends to be the number one thing that people need. They need a safe place, okay, or they just need a place to live in general. So we work with local housing providers, and we also have access to funds that can help someone with first and last month's rent or other kinds of support. We can do everything from providing someone with food and clothing, a new phone. We've helped someone recently become a cosmetologist and help pay tuition and licensing. So really, it depends on what the need of the person is. And we have a support fund that we use to directly provide those things. And we also, an important essential part of STAC is our community services advocate and her work. So she works directly with our clients to meet with them, see how they're doing, try to get the things that they need in place. And really, it's as varied as the people who are coming to us for help.
Okay. As far as trafficking is concerned, what types of methods are utilized to lure their victims? I mean, do they? I think they seem to camouflage, or in talking to you earlier, what the traffickers are camouflaging what they really want with the victims. They might think they're coming to do one thing and they're coming to do another. Is that basically what is happening?
Yes. Okay. And actually, I want to start answering, and maybe Kia, if you want to jump in, one of the things, and I so appreciate you mentioning this myth, Kia, about people think that it's always a case of kind of a kidnapping or a snatch and grab, when just what you're saying, Dr. Hollifield, is more the case. That's never happened, by the way, the snatch and grab or the kidnapping, not that that doesn't happen, but it's not happened with any of the people, the hundreds that we've assisted over the years. And what happens is just what you're saying. It's a kind of grooming process. It's where someone poses as a friend, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, an employer, with a promise of a job or love or other kinds of support that that person might be needing. It might be someone, I mean, I've gotten calls, I'll give you an example, from the hospital, where the hospital social worker said, something's not right about this guy that just came in with this pregnant woman and her mom. He's saying that you know, they can go and live with him. He's got an extra room, and he's real, something's not right. You know, it was that kind of thing where that person saw someone who had a vulnerable, you know, was vulnerable, had a need, and was sort of swooping in and saying, yeah, I can help you. And you know, we've got a podcast, by the way, called Imagine Freedom, where the very first episode, a survivor talks about how a trafficker invests time and money in getting someone in their clutches, essentially, luring them into a situation and then making it impossible with threats and other sorts of harm for that person to get out of it.
Okay. And another thing that you have emphasized that I think is a myth or a misnomer is that males are as vulnerable as females. That's what I'm hearing, you know, out of the examples that you're giving, that, oh, wait a minute, don't think it's just females and young girls that are human traffickers, I guess. Okay. But males are trafficked too, right? Am I correct?
Yes. And Kia, I'm thinking about the webinar we did when you and Bree talked about LGBTQ and males and right?
Yes, absolutely. One of the biggest things we were talking about is how there is this taboo talk, especially when you're talking about vulnerable communities, so to speak. Especially the LGBTQ community. So you're looking at where they are being displaced, or they're being looked at as someone that, you know, their families don't even want them. And the church, that's another big thing. Can I go to the church to actually get this assistance? We went very deep in that last podcast that we had, which was on our third Friday, in regards to talking about those different communities that are now so vulnerable and can be so easily manipulated, and the coercion that goes along with that. We could be sitting here for hours talking about that. But just from a PR perspective, how we would, you know, assist in helping victims is in regards to campaigns, you know, collaborating with law enforcement agencies and nonprofits. We went a little deeper into that, you know, leveraging those different media relationships. So with that being said, it's just bringing more education to the community of it is here, and we have to figure out ways in order to assist, especially those vulnerable communities. And like you stated, we don't think that males are actually, in a sense, targeted, but they are way more than we would like to think. So that was definitely a huge thing that we talked about in that last podcast.
Just how aware is the community about human trafficking, since it is so undercover, are so hidden? And I hear you saying you will provide workshops. You disseminate information about human trafficking. How aware is the community? Because I tell you, my emphasis, as I was sharing before, is that I don't think people are aware. I don't think they have a real grasp for what is exactly happening. They tend to think that it's not here. It's someplace else. It's not in my community. You know, it might be over there. So I pose that question to you. It might just even be rhetorical because it's everywhere, I know.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we just did on February 20th, we had a community conversation mm-hmm. at 621 Gallery. And to your point, we had about 30 people there. We sat in a circle. We've created this mural and we really had the mural be the sort of subject of how we discussed the existence of human trafficking and a survivor's journey from surviving to thriving. And there's symbolic images in it. And it was a really great way to open up the door for people to talk. And we had a high school student said, you know, I've had assignments in this area for years now, but I have learned more in this hour of talking than I ever have in school. She mm-hmm. said, I didn't know that labor trafficking was a thing. She didn't mm-hmm. know that. We had people talk about just what you said about not knowing that males are victims and also that females can be traffickers. A lot of times the stereotype is that it's mm-hmm. only men, these kind of creepy guys, right? But it's not true. Mm-hmm. It could be your grandmother. Mm-hmm. That event, and also we had a big event at the end of January where we had over, you know, 150 people come to the unveiling of this artwork, which I can talk about in a little bit. But I had people say, you know, I had no idea it was here. So mm-hmm. as much as kind of we've been out there and really this SAC has two missions. One is just educating the community in any way possible, any way anybody wants, we'll come to you, but and assisting survivors. But each time we do this, a large segment of people who attend say, I either didn't know it was here, I didn't know mm-hmm. what it looked like, or I didn't know this part of it. And, you know, it makes it frustrating when somebody might say, well, if you see something, say something. But if you think only girls can be sex trafficked and that's what human trafficking is only, you're going to see a young male and mm-hmm. you're not going to think twice about saying something because you won't understand that that happens.
Right.
And then the other part that's so frustrating for us is a lot of the stuff that comes out of Hollywood, like that last film, Sound of Freedom, or the movie Taken, mm-hmm. they tend to perpetuate these myths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Most definitely. I have a question. It may not make a lot of sense, but how does human trafficking differ from smuggling? Or mm-hmm. does it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So smuggling is really the voluntary crossing of a national border, right?
Okay.
And it's a crime against the border. It is where somebody agrees to be taken across the border by a facilitator or says, yeah, I'll go with you. When in fact, and let me just tell you the next step. Very often we see people agree that, yeah, I need the help of this person to get across the border mm-hmm. or to come to this country mm-hmm. on an airplane or as a student. I mean, there are a number of ways that people mm-hmm. get into the country. And they might be smuggled, but trafficking can emerge after someone has been smuggled into the country where a trafficker says, oh, additionally, you owe me another $5,000 or $10,000. And to pay that debt, you have to do what I say. You have to work in this factory. You have to have sex with these men here or women here. You have to You have to do this thing under my control. And that's when it turns into trafficking. Okay. So smuggling is the idea that the person still has a level of agency.
Yes. It's voluntary. It's voluntary.
Yeah,
okay.
It's voluntary.
Okay.
And seriously, I will tell you, in the media, it is often interchangeably used. And that's also frustrating because someone could be smuggled here and trafficking has nothing to do with it.
Comments? Did you have comments you wanted to share, Kia?
Well, I was just agreeing because at the end of the day, trafficking involves the exploitation of an individual. Mm-hmm. So as Robin was stating, you know, the smuggling is the illegal transportation of a person across the border. But again, as she was stating, we're needing to keep our eyes open because then it can develop into that actual human trafficking because now I'm about to exploit you.
Mm-hmm. Would you share, you or Robin share, the contact information for STAC, Survive and Thrive Advocacy Center?
Sure. So our website is surviveandthriveadvocacy.org. And if you go on our website, you'll see a wealth of educational materials, a lot of free stuff you can download, and other contact information. Let me also, though, give you our phone number, which is 850-597-2080.
Okay. How does one access your services? Can they just call up, drop by, whatever?
Yes, that number I gave is both call and text. So you can call and text. You can also go on the website and see at the very beginning, at the front of our homepage is a box that says get help, and it has resources listed there. You might not need us directly. You might need one of our allied organizations or another service provider. But I would encourage people to call or text, leave a message if you don't get an immediate answer, and we will reach back out to you, talk to you about what's going on. And people can call us too if they just suspect something is not quite right. You know, it's really hard sometimes to know if something is actually trafficking. So I encourage people to take action, even if they have an inkling and, you know, something I've heard people talk about, if something's not right, something on the hair on the back of my neck went up when I saw these two people together, whatever. They can call and say, I think something's going on. What should I do? And also there's a national human trafficking hotline. If they're outside of our area or going outside our area, which is 888-3737-888. That's a hotline 24/7, a tip line. You can call and just talk to somebody if you think you may, you know, be or might be trafficked or might be being groomed, or if you know somebody who might need some sort of help, or you just want, you know, you just want to talk it out.
One thing we haven't talked about is online trafficking. How prevalent is that?
Yeah, Kia, do you want to talk about some of the online stuff, or do you want me to start?
You can start and I'll jump right on in.
Okay. All right. Cause this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
This is your bailiwick. You know, we have a resource called the Youth and Caregivers Toolkit online that when people go to our website, they can look for that. And you're right. We have a whole, a lot of information about, especially with youth, that they are trafficked online using the internet in so many ways. It can start with someone who's playing a game, Fortnite, and a trafficker will direct message, will DM somebody and start, you know, pretending they're a peer, pretending they're a friend, pretending they're a friend of a friend, and start to develop a relationship. You know, we were developing this caregiver's toolkit. And I remember talking to one parent one of our interviewers was talking to a parent, and the parent said, look, I know where my kid is 24/7. They are not going to be a trafficker's not going to find them. And we know we all roll our eyes, right?
Because, right.
Yeah.
Right, Kia?
Yes, we do. I think the biggest thing, just to add on to what Robin is saying, you know, this is like an internet enabled trafficking, human trafficking, online human trafficking. It's all of that. So basically utilizing all these digital platforms and technologies to facilitate various forms of human trafficking. And as we stated before, exploitation. So then it rolls into like the key aspects of what online trafficking is. Just for people to kind of be aware, you're looking at recruitment and advertisements. Those are out there. Communication and control. And what I mean by that is that the internet kind of allows traffickers to maintain constant communication with victims. So it kind of goes back to what Robin was saying about that parent. I know where my child is 24 hours a day. Absolutely not, because you don't know where they are on that web. So the trafficker or the person that is trying to recruit the victim is looking at different ways to control the environment. So that's the communication and control aspect of social. You then also go down into financial transactions that they can start utilizing, where they do something like a recruitment fees or going a little deeper, payments for sexual services and going into that. That goes into kind of like cryptocurrency, so to speak. But then you have your dark web and then the underground networks. So this online or internet enabled trafficking is there. And it encompasses a range of activities where traffickers can leverage the internet and the online communication tools at their fingertips, right? I strongly implore, especially my industry, to start getting involved with organizations so that they can help them build out awareness campaigns. And these campaigns can
I go ahead, ask you to, I'm the one that's sorry. I ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a brief break and we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. Kia, I had to rudely interrupt you. Would you like to continue your thoughts? I'm sorry.
No problem. I'll be brief. I was just saying
We got plenty of time now. Okay.
Okay. I strongly implore, you know, my industry, public relations, communications, to get involved with organizations such as STAC. So you can help them build out those campaigns that will bring awareness. You know, these campaigns can raise different tactics that we can use to combat traffickers, or you know, putting together digital outreach campaigns or even partnering with tech companies in order to assist with removing certain traffic related content. But again, this online or internet based trafficking, this is just another form of trafficking that poses a unique challenge due to the global reach and anonymity afforded by the internet.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we'd be we have to mention sextortion, too, and how that issue intersects. Right. Okay. Because traffickers start to lure someone into a situation, especially youth, by posing as boyfriends or girlfriends or and ask for pictures, nudes or semi nudes. And then each request becomes a little more explicit. And then when they've gotten those pictures, they then say, well, if you, you know, if you want me to keep these private, then you've got to do what I'm going to ask you to do now. You've got to meet me here. You've got to do what I say. And just the threat of being exposed. And actually what's kind of scary now is with AI,
we
know people can write with somebody's head on another body and then say, this is you doing that. So we really, and I don't like to scare people without giving them a resource, right? So the way we ask people, parents, older people, especially with this internet situation, is to be part of your child's online life as much as you can, understand it, talk to them about the dangers of trafficking, the promises that traffickers make, the offers that seem too good to be true because they're probably not, they're lies, and their manipulations. So if a parent provides, or a caregiver, a coach, a bus driver, or, you know, school counselor, anybody can say, hey, look, you got to be on the lookout for this. If somebody's doing this, first of all, never put a nude or semi-nude picture of yourself online ever. Just don't do it. Because it is not gone. It is there forever. And then it can be used really to harm you and to threaten you in the future.
Yeah.
Globally, and this may not even make any difference, but I'm just wondering, as we were talking, globally, where do the victims come from? I mean, you know, Africa, Asia, Europe, Americas, where, or is it just every place? Or do we have pockets?
You know, that's a good question, because we see people from around the world being moved. And I should say, as part of that, that you don't, it's not required that someone's moved from point A to point B for there to be trafficking, right? Mm-hmm. It can happen inside somebody's home, you know, not ever crossing even a city boundary. In our area of North Florida, we have seen victims come from Eastern Europe. We have seen people from Latin America, from, you know, South and Central America. And those are kind of predominant. But there's not, you know, a particular country in our area that we can say, oh, number one, it's this country.
Okay.
I think it's also important to note how many U.S. citizens are trafficked. With, you know, and you don't in both sex and in labor trafficking. Some people think that only immigrants, say, are trafficked in agriculture. Well, U.S. citizens, one of the biggest cases was a Palatka case where African-American men were labor trafficked into a farm in Palatka. So, you know, it kind of can be any demographic, any ethnicity, U.S. citizen or an immigrant.
Okay. What about political and institutional challenges, I guess is what I'm asking. I mean, how does that work? How do they interface with what, when we're talking about human trafficking? Does that, am I expressing myself clearly? I mean, for example, Since sex trafficking is sort of an economic and a violent crime, it calls for law enforcement to intervene too, right? And even like with political challenges, the status of the countries that the individuals come from, the status of the countries that are pushing these individuals into sex trafficking. You know,
it sure does. And, you know, part of any kind of instability or vulnerability is going to create a market for human traffickers.
Okay.
So when you think about a country where there's been, you know, political instability, where there's, or economic.
Exactly. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. A downturn. So if you have somebody who is desperate, that they're going to be desperate enough to look to anybody for help. And a trafficker is more than willing and able to come forward. So we do see that. Absolutely. And we also see there being a kind of political blind spot, I think, when it comes to the trafficking impacting people who are vulnerable. So if we're not, and I'm going to wax larger on you here, I think, but if we're not supporting people with a living wage or housing or access to healthcare what their kids need to be safe, then a trafficker will step in,
right?
You know,
so right.
What is the political response? And it, I will say, like in Florida, our laws around trafficking are generally pretty good.
Yeah.
But what we don't see is the funding and support for the victims and survivors after, say, a trafficker has been arrested or prosecuted and incarcerated. What happens to the victims. Like, how, where's right. the housing? Where's the support in the community?
Yeah.
So they're not re-trafficked by a different trafficker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another question with that is, how are the victims of human trafficking impacted? And by that, I mean, you know, the psychological stress, the anxiety, the fear. Do you have any research or anything that you can refer to, even experiential, as far as, you know, working there at the advocacy center, of how it impacts them? Even after they're out of it, how do they cope? How do they deal with it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have seen that a lifelong impact of this trauma on individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who might have been trafficked in their youth are still suffering the effects of that in their 50s.
Mm-hmm.
They may have an addiction, or they may have had missed out on the opportunity to learn a trade or have a stable existence, basically. So we see the extremes of what trauma can do to somebody. So I encourage anybody working in this field or where this could be happening to make sure you yourself are trauma informed about exactly how this this is a lifelong potential impact. We also see cases, and one of the people that Stack assisted, and we have a podcast with him, is a man named Samir Jain, who was labor trafficked. He's been able to move forward. He owns a house now in Tallahassee. He and his family have been able to really heal from a lot of what happened during that time in his life. And he is doing great. He serves on a national White House council on of survivors to talk about this issue. So it can have a lifetime traumatic impact. And I would say, regardless of someone who is, say, like Samir, that this happens to you, it really can impact really every phase of your life for a very, very long time.
Again, would you share the contact information for STAC?
Sure. SurviveAndThriveAdvocacy.org is our website. And you can also call us at 850-597-2080.
Are there volunteer efforts available to participate or work at your advocacy center?
Yes. And I would say, the first thing I'd say is, as I think about Kia being on this call as a board member, I think you are an amazing volunteer for STAC. So also put it out there that a board, you know, working with us on our board is also a great opportunity, but we have a lot of events. Kia, would you like to talk about some of them?
Absolutely. I think in being a part of this organization, we don't look at things lightly. So all of us get in and do the work. I know with most boards, that's not necessarily true. But even with our last community event that we had at 621 Gallery, that was a huge event that we thought brought a bigger amount of the community there, because it was a discussion. It was less of, you know, you can find us here. It's more of us being very tangible and easy to find us, so to speak. Not with every board or with every organization is that easy, because even with Robin and then one of our other staff members that's out in the community, Graciela, they are always doing something. So I think as a board member, it's almost not necessarily an expectation. It's ingrained in us to make sure that we're doing everything we can to ensure that we continue to thrive, no pun intended. But that's the only way that we're going to be able to have a legacy for this organization, to continue to be impactful to our community. So putting in that work is not just being a board member and sitting at a desk and making, or, you know, in a boardroom making decisions. We are out in the community. We're serving the community. And as I stated before, it's ingrained in us to do all the work that we want to do in order to combat this horrendous crime.
And, you know, one of the things that we find is, as we've been talking today, all about informing people about what trafficking is. I would encourage anybody can volunteer as well to host a training, to themselves be more educated. On our website, we have webinars that we've recorded on every topic, you know, from sextortion to gangs and how they traffic people, to what you can do in your workplace, to what you can do as a healthcare provider to know more and to do better. We've got a host of resources that you can right now work with us to host a training, to become educated yourself, to volunteer and help us meet the needs of our survivors. So as I mentioned, we have diverse needs that our survivors, you know, we might need gift cards, gas cards, we might need phones, help with transportation, donating to the organization, asking us to come out and speak to your Rotary Club or your women's group or your faith community. Invite us to be part of what you are doing, because, like, for example, when I go to a lot of churches and speak, the ministries that people are doing are already helping people with vulnerabilities. They need to layer this issue onto what they're already doing in community. So volunteer, be part of the efforts that we have ongoing in our community by connecting up with us, and also doing what you can to inform yourself so that when, not if, you encounter somebody who's been trafficked, you'll know what to do.
You know, as I'm sitting here talking with you all, you know, my mind is just running, and I'm thinking, and I want you to redirect me if I'm wrong, but human trafficking, you know, we can look at it from a number of different perspectives, but I think we also, and we've touched on this, it's got to be viewed from the structural conditions that facilitate it. I mean, the structure, and you mentioned this, the structural conditions that facilitate the exploitation. I mean, for example, victims of institutional oppression, our racism, our classism, our sexism. I mean, that's what it's going on in my head, so you can tell me I'm wrong. But can you talk a little bit, we don't have much, about how social justice interfaces with human trafficking? Does that, am I making sense? Tell me. Oh, okay. All right. I mean, you know, as we're talking, I'm thinking, well, you know, such and such. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
we have a committee called the Social Justice Committee because of the interconnectedness of this issue with all of those forms of oppression that create these vulnerabilities. You can't separate them, you know? And that's why we look at kind of, you have to take a wider lens view of this issue and understand that the context of it happening and who's vulnerable, who's most vulnerable, and then you understand the issue more and what you can do. So you're absolutely right on. In fact, we have on our website our statement regarding this very thing. You know, social justice and human trafficking are intrinsically interconnected is the lead on our webpage.
Okay. All right. Now, I also read, Kia, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I was agreeing with Robin, but it goes into the marginalized and vulnerable populations that we were discussing, and that's how they kind of intertwine. Even if you're looking at it from when we were talking about the men, refugees, individuals living in poverty. So it has a lot to do with those from LGBTQ. We talked about that. But just kind of giving it a perspective of what you stated, you know, Robin said it in the broad sense, but those different populations, we, you know, systematic discrimination, inequality, the lack of access to education. So all of those are part of social justice and how it intersects with human trafficking.
Well, I tell you, I have 1,000 more questions because they're just coming up in my head. But I'm looking at the clock, and I know Evan's going to be giving me the evil eye if I go over time, which I'm more very inclined to do. So I'm going to say I appreciate you all for really, you know, taking the time out of your busy schedules to come and share this information with 411 Teen and my listening audience. It's time out for this edition of 411 Teen. Many thanks to Robin Hassler-Thompson and Kia Thomas. Again, I just appreciate you so. To my listening audience, so much thanks for your time and your ear. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, inviting you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. Thank you. Thank you. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at wfsu.org.